Hello, my name is Vanessa Vallely and I'm CEO of We Are Tech Women. I'm delighted to introduce She Talks Tech, which is a podcast which brings to life the personal experiences of women and men working in tech with a focus on diversity, equity and inclusion. We also include the odd technical topic to keep you abreast of innovating areas of tech that may be of interest to you. So this is a brand new season, season six, and we're delighted to focus on a number of incredible women looking at their career and sharing their top tips for success. Today, I will be discussing PA Consulting's Gender in STEM report and looking at the results and stats of how we can use these to better understand the challenges faced by women in the industry. Men have always outnumbered women working in science, technology, and engineering and mathematics. While things have improved, there's a long way to go to achieve a balanced workforce. Women comprise of just 28% of the STEM workforce in the US and just 24% in the UK. It's an issue PA Consulting care passionately about. Their award-winning Women in Tech Network promotes diversity through inspirational learning opportunities and events. Their latest research points to some powerful opportunities and practical steps for organisations to make it easier for women, trans and non-binary people to work and succeed in STEM. They recently carried out quantitative and qualitative research into what people are seeing and experiencing and what they believe would make a difference. As well as understanding the state of play, they want to use the results combined with experience and expertise to come up with solutions. During this research, they consulted with mid to senior level decision makers, business leaders in STEM industries through an online survey that went across the US and the UK. They also supplemented this with in-depth interviews with gender experts, decision and policy makers and other professionals in the STEM business line. To discuss the report, I'm joined by four incredible individuals from PA Consulting. So first up, I have Claudia Pellegrino, who's an agile consultant. She's an ambitious business design consultant who has worked on complex assignments in banking and IT transformation. She's experienced in customer-centric analysis, process redesign and benefits management, and she's passionate about agile software delivery and agile business design. Secondly, I'm joined by partner Andrew Earnshaw, who is a digital healthcare expert and global lead of digital engineering and DevOps. Andrew is a leading healthcare innovator, combining business and technology to improve patient care. Thirdly, I'm joined by Julian Antrobus, partner and global head of nuclear, as well as an honorary fellow of the Nuclear Institute. Julianne is also a partner sponsor of PA's Global Women's Network and senior advisor to the Executive Board for Women in Nuclear. She has over 25 years experience working in the sector in strategic, commercial and operational roles. Finally, but last but not least, is Teresa Jones. She's a digital analyst with expertise in up-and-coming and developing challenges in healthcare technology, such as integration and user experience. She is passionate about enhancing digital accessibility and delivering high quality solutions for secure user telehealth applications. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice to have you with me. Right, let's delve into the research and some of the findings. So I'm going to start off with Claudia. So a bit of a long question, Claudia, but I'm eager to find out some answers. What were the key findings of your recent report around closing the gap in STEM? What I'm interested in is what insights does it offer about efforts to attract and recruit diverse talent pools? And how does this shed a light on the progress made and the challenges that still remain in terms of diversity, equity and inclusion?
Absolutely. So, I think the key thing that we found out actually when going through the findings of the report is that at face value, the situation doesn't look that bad anymore. We're positively surprised that actually gender diversity in STEM is one of the top key priorities for STEM businesses. In fact, 56% of those surveyed actually felt it was one of the top three priority, and 17% of the STEM businesses we surveyed actually thought it was the number one priority. So basically 20% of executives in STEM businesses said that to increase gender diversity is the number one thing that I want to do within my STEM organization. So that was incredibly great to see. And we were like very pleased when we actually looked like beyond like STEM companies, we actually looked at a bit broadly at the state of the industry. So when we spoke to executives, but also mid-level employees, everyone agreed, well, 78% agreed that they saw a strong improvement in the state of the industry. So they saw a strong improvement in how the industry was encouraging more women and non-binary to enter and succeed in the STEM industry. And pretty much everyone agreed, 80%, that a diverse workforce was actually crucial to build a better workplace for the future. So very positive, staggering results that everyone was pretty pleased with. However, and of course there was going to be a however, then we started looking into the data a bit more, especially we started looking into the extent in which satisfaction varied between men and women, and also satisfaction varied between C-suite and also middle management employees. So, for example, when we say 78% is satisfied with the improvements made recently, we then realize that actually men are on average 12% more satisfied than women, meaning that actually the level of satisfaction of men when they talk about the positive improvements in how diverse is the STEM industry is much higher than the ones of the impacted individuals, women and non-binary. And the second point was actually that the C-suite was maybe blinded by a false sense of progress, with actually the C-suite was on average 35% more satisfied than middle management when they came to answer the question, how satisfied are you and how happy are you with the recent improvements within the gender diversity in STEM industry? We then actually looked at some of the qualitative interviews that we held, and we saw some commentaries from some men working professionals in tech. Things like, no one is holding anyone back in my industry, just don't focus on it, just focus on qualifications and you're going to get the results. And then things like, how about men not sacrificing for equality? So we actually felt that the more that we digged into the data, and especially in the qualitative interviews, the more that we felt like that this issue should still be one of the top priorities, and that we are not there yet. There is still a lot that companies must do. There is still a lot that must be fixed. And this is even more felt when it comes to the trans and non-binary community. We actually felt from the qualitative interviews that a lot of workplaces actually remain reactive rather than proactive. They do have policies like women-centric benefits, but they don't have anything such as, trans benefits or non-binary benefits, essentially, policies that can really tackle the issue of intersectionality to make sure that we don't just have cisgender white women into our STEM industry, but actually we have a very broad representation of non-binary women of all colors into the STEM industry.
Fantastic. So it's a good story, but obviously it appears we still have much work to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Much work to do. And actually, what we found is that 70% still agrees that there are still some structural barriers hindering progress. And funny enough, no one could really agree on what the main barriers were. The C-suite always were talking about the lack of diversity network, which are usually, networks led by young employees. So again, it looked like the C-suite was blaming young employees for this lack of diversity. Middle managers saying, the main barrier remaining is the lack of executive sponsorship. Again, yep. Seemed like middle managers were blaming the others. So yeah, it was interesting that everyone agrees that there is still a lot more to do. There are still some barriers, especially when it comes to recruiting women and attracting a diverse talent workforce, but no one could actually agree on what the barriers were. But everyone could agree that it was something that they didn't have the power to lift. So it was after someone else.
And within the report, I mean, obviously you provide guidance, don't you, to such as like, you know, actively listening to those concerns, addressing the questions, conducting regular training sessions, maintain regularly updated and transparent communication. So for those of you who are watching, you know, we'll link off to the report and you guys can go and have a look at some of those recommendations as well. But that gives us a great starting point. So a great story, but with much work to do. That's kind of what I took from that. So I'm going to move on to Teresa. So Teresa, what specific factors and attributes do you find the younger generation prioritise when they're selecting employers? Because it's a really interesting one.
So in my opinion, that the younger generation places a really big emphasis on many factors and attributes that reflect our own values and aspirations. So we normally gravitate towards employers who prioritise merit and skills as the main factors for professional development. Yep. But we're also drawn to organisations that provide support and training opportunities, and this is to enhance our own skills and advance in our careers. Representation is another key value for the younger generation, and we look for employers that prioritise diversity, not only within the workplace, but also in leadership positions. So being represented reinforces our belief in equal opportunities and motivates us to contribute to our organisation. Last but not least, collaboration and engagement within the community are also critical factors. I believe that as a community, we look for workplaces that not only offer fulfilling career prospects, but also demonstrate a genuine commitment to fostering an environment of equality and respect.
So Teresa, I mean, all of that's great. You know, it's really good to hear from that younger generation of what you guys are looking for, but role models are important as well, aren't they? Having access to role models and senior leaders that can kind of show you the way.
Definitely, role models are very important, and I do believe that seeing someone within your company that you can aspire to does encourage the young generation to continue working on themselves and advance within their careers.
Absolutely, and that representation matters, doesn't it? You know, because otherwise, you know, we need people that understand how we drive our own careers and stuff like that, and people that we can relate to. So, absolutely love that. So I'm going to come on to Julianne. How do you retain women in STEM? You know, what is the role of leadership in terms of that retention?
Great question. I'll probably start with leadership. Can I make an addition to what Teresa said actually on the last question? Because I think there's a really important role around STEM, careers in STEM and women in STEM, particularly around, I think future talent is also looking for purpose-driven organisations. And I think STEM has a real role within that purpose-driven environment. If you think of some of the biggest challenges we've got in front of us, you know, the energy crisis, net zero, they need the best brains that we have around the world. And STEM has absolutely a key role within that. So I think there's another build, which is very much about, you know, people are attracted by purpose-led organisations. And you find that those purpose-led organisations then have the leadership that cascades into building diverse and inclusive environments. And I think, you know, for me, that question, Vanessa, has to start with leadership and authentic leadership in terms of being passionate about driving the right inclusive and diverse environments for people to thrive in. We did some work that was supplementary actually to the STEM report, which was around a new way to lead and what, you know, attracts people to organisations and what they're looking for in leadership going forward. And there was very much a point around breaking down silos, helping people to work in a growth zone, creating environments where you're cultivating kindness, you're thinking about other people's perspectives, thinking about what drives them, how we get disruption in the room. And you only get disruptors in the room if you can be creative and you can bring diverse thought into the room and bring the quietest voice into the room almost. And I think throughout all of that, it's around having authentic leadership to create that kind of an environment. So our work around a new way to lead was supplementary to the STEM report, and it showed that you know, future talent is looking for something different and is drawn by a different leadership style. Now, you know, we've had the fortune within PA, we've had leadership that is absolutely passionate about driving a diverse and inclusive workforce. And you can see that. And I've had the privilege of working with previous leaders that operate and create that kind of environment. But it makes a massive difference. So you got to kind of start, I think, with the leadership. It goes back to the point you made, Teresa, around representation, and you, Vanessa. And then I think if you can do that, then you can have a conversation about retention, because people are passionate. They then work in an environment that brings the best out of them, allows them to thrive. And I think in the industry I work in, which is nuclear, we have been very guilty of attracting and then retaining talent through, I think, a capability lens. You know, what's been your capability and experience? But actually, the most important thing about the strengths of what an individual can bring to an organization. And I think when a strengths-based approach to recruitment and retention is considered within a STEM environment, that creates something really, really special. And actually, it changes what you are looking for. It changes how you're going out to the market, how you're creating and then retaining individuals within an organization. So there's a lot in that question. But I think the most important thing is as well is there are real things, tangible things that everybody can do around retention and retaining women in STEM. One is sponsorship. When that individual isn't in the room, the best thing you can do is sponsor an individual. We've been running a program now for nearly over 2 years, Women Leadership Program within PA, which is about kind of busting some myths about leadership roles and giving everybody the ability to see what that route could look like for them as an individual, but also to explore their own leadership style. But sponsorship is a key component of that program. Totally getting agree. Sponsors in our leadership team to really get to know the future talent that is coming through our organization. Now, we're fortunate at PA that we are first and foremost an innovation and technology consultancy. So we need STEM experience, capability, strengths in spades. So it's actually we're living and breathing it every day, in terms of how we create the environment and then how we retain staff. But I think sponsorship really key, and everybody can be a sponsor. It doesn't matter what grade, what role you lead. And also showcasing, you can't be what you can't see. Yeah. And I think giving people access to that and individuals and seeing that it is changing at the top and it is going to cascade through, I think is really, really important. So two things that I would leave in terms of sponsorship and showcasing around that question.
You're speaking to the converted. You know, we've been talking about sponsorship for years. We also had a large conference last December with 450 individuals in the room, men and women, and sponsorship was key. And it was really interesting because some of the guys are saying, and again, I'm going to come on to Andrew and interested in his perspective after his question, that, you know, they want to sponsor, but sometimes they don't always know what that looks like, you know, so they're super keen. And also another interesting point that came up around that discussion was actually it's not just the sponsorship. We shouldn't just be pointing the finger at the men saying you need to sponsor us. It's senior women because they're in rooms that these individuals are not in. So absolutely preaching to the converted, sponsorship is absolutely key within that. And again, as you see, I think it's the role of leadership to drive the culture. And from what I know of PA Consulting, a great innovative culture where you can have these conversations and not be afraid to fail, perhaps, you know, because that's the whole point of innovation. So wonderful. So coming on to you, Andrew, how does PA approach retaining skills and upskilling employees, because it's really important that we keep that going, and what role do you believe that coaching plays in supporting an individual's development and growth?
Absolutely, and kind of I guess this builds on what Julianne was saying. There's the retention, but part of retention is training and skills development of individuals all the way through the career, from those at the beginning of the career all the way through to those who are kind of more senior. So we typically follow that the very traditional kind of three-pronged approach to skills development: formal training, peer training, and on-the-job training. Yeah, fairly well rehearsed in the industry. But what we've realized is that there's a certain bias that starts to become applied to that if you're not careful. And so we've really tried to ensure that we are conscious of that bias and removing it where appropriate. So particularly if you look at like formal training, certification, that might be software development, software engineering certification, or it might be kind of broader technology training. Quite often we found individuals and women early in the career don't feel like they want to go on those sorts of training courses or don't feel like they're allowed to go on those sorts of training courses. So it's really important that we make sure people are aware that those are available to everyone, regardless of gender. Peer training equally, making sure that women early in their careers or throughout their careers feel able to engage with peer training and are willing to peer train each other. And then finally, on the job training and on the job learning can only be successful if individuals are being given access to those projects, those engagements, those opportunities to discover and explore different types of work. Again, it's all very well and good being formally trained through a process, but until you get onto the engagement, onto the project, working with organizations, will you really start to pick that out? And so again, ensuring that there's no bias in the selection process of individuals going into projects, and that there's a true equity in that process of deploying individuals into projects. Coaching plays a big part in all of what I've just described, of course. And that ranges from coaches being able to identify individuals and promote them into those opportunities, whether that's formal training or on the job training, and ensuring that people like peers, when you're coaching each other and on a kind of peer support basis, that you are also willing to coach and sponsor individuals to make sure you have access to those training opportunities and skills development opportunities. And a kind of final point to all of this is, it's not just about someone going through a linear path from the start of their career to the end of their career and then kind of going up steps in that skills development. There's, of course, cross-skilling and career-changing activities that happen as well. And one of the things that we've really tried to invest in as PA is the idea of being able to cross-skill or cross-train people from one industry to another, maybe one skill set to another, and bring people from perhaps a more diverse range of different starting careers into a technology career space as well. If you think of the pipeline of talent that comes through right from early days of primary school all the way up through secondary schools, high schools, universities, ensuring that any historical difference and kind of bias of training through the early parts of people's careers doesn't carry forward into the later careers. So providing those opportunities to cross-skill and career change as well. And again, that comes back to the coaching and mentoring activities that are important for all of that.
And I think that's really important, for companies, for me, are forward thinking in terms of promoting those internal mobility moves and being able to pick up someone that currently resides in another department, invest in them in terms of their training, whatever way that looks, in order to move them into tech roles, because we don't have a strong pipeline coming through, with particularly in the UK, with girls coming out of schools and choosing STEM careers. So we have to work with what we've got, right? So I think that's absolutely forward thinking. Just quickly on a note, one of the things that come out of a lot of our focus groups, that also people talk about, as a development tool, is access to external networks as well, and how they can basically build their own knowledge and their own kind of circle of trust and people that they can learn from by kind of going out to external events as well. So I think that's really important. I know that's something that you promote as well. So moving on to Claudia, talking about retraining, you've had a bit of a career change. I mean, you went from law into tech consulting. How has that worked in your experience?
I think it was hard at times, and I went for the route of on-the-job training a lot of add-on certification, like cloud certification, so on, to sort of bump up my understanding of tech. But it was a very natural progression. I think after university, something that I knew for sure is that I did not want to be a lawyer, but I think I made that decision a bit too late in the game, when actually I was about to enter into a law firm office to basically start a 3 months internship that would have translated into then training contract and so on. And I was like, no, actually, this is really not for me. So luckily I managed to get a job in tech. And the reason why I chose tech is because all of my housemates at uni were technologists. So I was like, well, I still know a bit about coding, so let me go with that. I think for me, imposter syndrome was the biggest issue. Like, I felt different because I didn't come from the same background as all of my colleagues in my first job, but then also at PA. So I always felt a bit of a disadvantage. The second point we're actually think technology is very similar to law is there's so much to know, you're never going to know everything. And, yeah, you know, you can be an amazing lawyer, but actually know a very specific sector of the law. Same thing with technology. You can be an amazing coder, an amazing like AI expert, but, you know, someone might talk to you about something else, which is tech related, and you might be like, I really don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. And actually drawing this parallel really helped me out, being I don't need to know everything. I just need to be very good at what I'm doing and always keep investing in myself in my own development. The third thing, which I think PA was really good, which goes back to the on-the-job learning point that Andrew was talking about, is to give people a chance to learn and develop, and also to to give people a chance to succeed even in there and to learn on the job. And I think that's very important, especially in like a consulting industry where like we sell people as experts. So I've been sold sometimes onto some assignments where I was like, I know I can do it. I know I have it in me. Maybe I've not, shown this skill before, but I know I have it in me and like I can actually do the job. And just like being trusted by my assignment managers to be like, you have it in you, you know these things, and maybe you haven't applied them before to this practical context, but like you know how to do it in your brain, was really important for me, because I was always stretched to learn a bit more about technical topics, learn a bit more about, you know, for example, how cloud computing works, and then essentially build my own baggage of skills that now is, you know, has made me become who I am. And now actually I have stopped apologizing from not being technical enough. Maybe, you know, when I'm in a technical workshop, I stop apologizing for, you know, not having the traditional, you know, coded background. And yeah, I just got into this whole like women in tech scene, which is very exciting and I'm very passionate about. And that essentially, you know, why now I want to give back to others. I want to make sure that anyone else can do what I've done, that we can have the freedom to explore different career paths without being scared, and also, you know, being trusted and empowered to, you know, to learn and improve.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, barriers for women in tech, I mean, they are there, unfortunately, in abundance. We did some research a couple of years back with Ipsos Mori and Tech Talent Charter, which surfaced all sorts of barriers. Access to role models, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier on, access to role models in there. There were things like the squiggly careers and, you know, the fact that sometimes you are stuck in a hierarchy in some companies. Sponsorship was on there as well, but there are more challenges. So I know, for example, I say you've covered some of those barriers in your report, but Julianne, I'm interested, what are the key challenges and barriers that you believe still exist for women in STEM? And from your own personal experience, how have some of those impacted you?
Yeah, and that is a great question. I think it does go beyond the report. I mean, I think, you know, it's a bit like an onion. There's very many layers to that question. I think organisationally, you know, I don't think there's anybody right there that we can look to that says that they've got it right. I think everybody's almost on the journey to understanding what that looks like. I mean, we've talked about some of the things, making sure, you know, there are role models and there is the sponsorship. I think the barriers still exist because of a lack of understanding, actually, almost a lack of understanding around the potential around those women in STEM and the careers that can be created through those. And the fact that we have a tendency to stereotype, which is a guilty trait of many, obviously in kind of leadership roles as well. And I think everybody has a different story and needs something different. So, you know, being able to have flexible working patterns to allow for the fact that actually everybody's at a different point in their career. Some people are at the start of the career, they might be thinking about families, starting families, they need a flexible working at that side. And at the other end, you know, we'll all possibly have the, you know, aging parents to kind of consider. People need to consider kind of the work-life balance within the whole and what that flexible working pattern can look like. You know, I'm a partner within PA. I work 4 days a week. You know, that's a really important position, I think, to be able to demonstrate to others that you can find it. Now, I'm my worst enemy, by the way, let me tell you. And it's my team that keep me honest. My team will challenge me. You know, it's your day off, Julianne, you shouldn't be on this call. But equally, I'm committed to the team, but equally I know I've got to get the right balance. But being able to kind of get the right working environment for people to flourish is really, really important. So organizationally, there's a whole piece, and we talked about, you know, visibility and authenticity earlier. I think there's a massive societal piece. And I know, you know, the book around invisible women, which Claudia Criado Perez, which I won't say it as well as you, Claudia. Sometimes when I read books around how society has shaped itself around supporting women, both in outside of work and inside of work, it makes me angry. It gets me upset. Mm-hmm. But equally, we've done it in spite of all that, actually. We've done it. And I think that's really, really important. So the whole premise of Invisible Women is around the fact that there's a big gap in data. We have created a world that is designed by men. Thankfully, we've got Andrew on the call, who I have great regard for. So it's not a... But equally, we are making decisions about health, about life sciences, about transport, about society that are informed by half of the population. And we're making those decisions. But equally, look at how successful we've been in spite of that is probably. But hopefully we get to a point where actually we are getting the data and the voice is being heard in terms of helping to influence those kind of societal changes, which we so dramatically need. But then there's a third layer, I think, which is about the individual and the personal side of it. Women in STEM just bring something totally different. You know, we bring empathy, we bring collaboration, we bring a different style of working, which I think is so complementary to men in STEM. And together, it is powerful when it comes together. You know, I've spent 25 years working in a purely male-dominated environment. Now, fortunately, you asked me about my experience. Fortunately, I have had sponsorship along the way. I didn't see it at the time. But then now when I look back, I thought, oh, yeah, I can signpost directly to where that was. Now, I had the fortune of always working for employers that had foresight and were kind of enlightened on the journey to creating diverse and inclusive environments. So, you know, I come with a positive experience, actually. And it's how do I kind of help others emulate that, I think.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with all of that. And I think, you know, you talk about societal things, you know, Carolyn Corrado's Perez's book, she's actually spoken for us at We Are Tech Women. You know, it is an eye opener. And I'm so glad the conversation that's happening is, you know, you can't design things in the room without the people there that product, service, whatever it is there to serve. So we can't design in ivory towers. And that goes exactly back to the point of your report around why we need everyone at the table, and that equity plays a massive part in that. So, yeah, couldn't agree more. So moving on to you, Andrew, as we come towards the end of the podcast and this recording. So if you could make a pledge to improve gender diversity in STEM, what would it be? Not putting you on the spot here, Andrew, but what do you believe that would be? What would the pledge be?
Yeah, great question. And I get asked this quite often. I go, can I only have one? That's so unfair. Because I'm sure there are so many. I mean, there's a you know, increasing diversity in leadership is an important thing. I would like to do more of that. Improving our gender inclusive policies, that I would not do more of that. Changing the role of mentors to sponsors and doing more sponsorship, etc. I would want to do more of that. And it feels almost a bit unfair to only be able to choose one of those things. But if I was to kind of think back to what do I think is really going to make the difference in the long term, it goes back to what we were discussing earlier, Vanessa. The idea that we have to look back, I think, in earlier in people's careers, whether that's the start of their career or even back into education. And the one thing I personally would like to do more of myself and encourage others to do more is really sponsor those going through earlier stages of their education. Women in schools and universities, ensuring they have access to STEM courses, making sure that there are those barriers that prevent young women going into STEM careers or taking STEM subjects at school or universities, trying to break those barriers down. And for me, that's probably the biggest thing I would like to do more of myself. And the pledge that I would like to make is to really break down those barriers.
Fantastic. We're going to hold you to that, Andrew, but you've convinced me. So Teresa, final question. As a graduate analyst, so someone who's obviously very early on in their career, what specific resources, mentorship opportunities, career development programs do you believe, like does PA have offered you or that you've experienced that helps you in your professional growth and that you believe will help you to succeed in a career in the STEM industry?
So I joined PA in September 2022. So that's almost been a year now. And one of the standard aspects of the organization is the amount of support through both internal opportunities and external opportunities that have been offered. So examples of this are our Workday and Q Academy platforms, as well as some PA-led workshops. Through this, I've had the privilege to have many certifications that are valuable to my industry, but also have a deep understanding of the foundation of how this industry works. One of the main foundations of PA is how they've fueled my professional growth with their supportive network. So through the early careers team, I've been offered a mentorship program and also a body scheme. And this is where graduate analysts are paired up with experienced professionals, and then we receive guidance and also have the opportunity to network with other like-minded people. I feel very supported at PA. And one of the key features that also set them apart is the fact that they have a very clear career framework. So this outlines the skills and the milestones that I need to track in order to grow within my career journey. And I also get regular evaluation and constructive feedback from my line manager.
Fantastic. So it's been awesome to talk to you all. I mean, I think everyone should download a copy of the report. There's some absolute great insights in there. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation that we've had with all of our guests today. There are some absolutely incredible tips, I think, that we can all take away and think about. So firstly, it just leaves me to give my sincere thanks to Claudia, Andrew, Julianne and Teresa for joining me.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
And you can download a copy of that report via the PA Consulting website. I'm sure there'll be job opportunities there. If any of you are interested in joining this inclusive, hugely passionate, innovative business in tech, so do check them out as well.
And thanks to all of you for listening. We really appreciate it. Please do subscribe and rate the podcast and give us that all-important 5-star review. And keep tuned to our channel for new episodes of She Talks Tech.